So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, I sit down with Tanya Laird, founder of Digital Jam, to talk virtual reality. What's best practice for TV and audio storytellers working in this new medium, and what are the mistakes to avoid? It's all to come on this special VR edition, no helmets required, of the Media Podcast. So I'm joined today by the head of Digital Jam and the founder of the VR Writers Room, Tanya Laird. Tanya, how did you get into VR?
Purely by accident. actually, because of my background in the games industry, and naturally when everybody suddenly decided they wanted to talk about VR and they wanted to find out more about how it works, there was this natural synergy of a relationship between the games industry and VR. So there was this assumption that if you were in the games industry, you kind of understood what VR was and how it worked. And in the end, it just got to the stage where I was like, fine, you know what, I'll talk to you about it.
Give us a sense then of the sheer scale of the industry as it is now, because last year I read it was called the billion-dollar niche.
Okay, so here's the thing, is common misconception again is that it's just a VR games or entertainment industry thing. The thing is that the other industries such as medical, military, fashion, architecture, education, all of these guys, they've been using VR for ages and they've been making money out of it for ages. Theme parks have been making money out of VR for decades. So the actual reality...
Give us a notable example of that.
So the theme park industry, so people like Disney as a for example, have been using the idea of immersivity in their theme park rides for decades.
Okay, so you're not literally... So again, I've probably got to get over a stumbling block here. A lot of people are thinking, but I've never put a helmet on when I've gone on a Disney ride.
And this is the common misunderstanding of what virtual reality actually is that it means HMD or head-mounted display, which is the goggly thing that you put on your head, which most people, again, this is due to the Oculus Rift, assume that VR means headset. Mm. It doesn't mean headset necessarily. There are many different types of immersive technology, and virtual reality is really the creation of an artificial environment that makes the user or the participant believe that they are in that alternative environment.
Right, so that could be a bank of screens around a room, or I guess it could be something that doesn't involve screens at all. It
definitely doesn't have to involve screens. And the thing is that there's the idea of augmented reality, which is layering on artificial or fictional elements to the existing world that we see, versus virtual reality, which is creating the entirety of that environment so that it's a fictional environment that you're within. And that's the key difference. But that difference doesn't require that you have screens or headsets or other types of technology to facilitate that.
Okay,
a really good example...
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Give me a notable example. The what?
Is the bus to Mars was a great example of non-HMD virtual reality that was done by the good guys here at Framestore. Essentially, what they did was they had an American school bus. It was in Washington, D.C., where they replaced all of the windows in that bus with specialist displays, and they created a virtual version of the surface of Mars. So these kids, they get on this school bus, they're driving around, and then as they go through the activation, the windows change, and suddenly they're on the surface of Mars. and they're able to drive around and explore the surface of Mars, and there are storm fronts that they have to dodge, and that, you know, they can go closer to a camp over there, or they can see a mountain over there, and they can drive towards these things, and they can actually explore the surface as a collective group. It's a social collaborative VR experience that doesn't require a headset. And that's a great example of the fact that you don't need a HMD, you don't need something on the surface of your face in order to actually experience virtual reality. And that's where theme parks have been going for quite some time now. If you go to Universal or you go to, you know, one of the Disney parks, there's a lot of these rides where, you know, you have the 3D roller coasters or all these other things where you're just in the car, you're not sitting there with a thing on your face. So I do think it's a very common misconception for a lot of people with it. When you say VR, they immediately assume it means a VR headset. But in the fashion industries and in the military defense industries, that isn't necessarily the case.
Okay. But a lot of people listening to this probably don't, sadly. They might like to make, you know, high-budget theme park rides for Disney.
Yes, yes.
Most people listening to this, when they've encountered it in the commissioning process, it's been, can you do this in 360? Can we do this for a head-mounted display?
Yes.
And it will be a conversation with the BBC or Sky or something like that. In that context, I think there's also some confusion about the difference between those two things. What's VR and what's 360?
Okay. For the purists who are listening, 360 is not VR. For the people who are less engendered into the industry, 360 is basically being able to stand in a static position within a live-action video of some sort and be able to see all around you in 360.
So actually, that's what CNN, for example, have been playing with, isn't it?
Yes, that's what most TV and film have been playing with.
I think they do call it VR, though,
they do call
it
VR.
But it isn't.
Well, it's 360. It's you can look around in 360.
Because you can't interact.
You can't interact. You can't pick up an object that you see. You can't even lean into it necessarily and see or look around an object or, you know, any of those other kinds of things. You can look basically in any direction in 360, but if I wanted to then look around and you know, look around a corner, lean forward, look around a corner, I can't do that in 360. Mm-hmm. Whereas in true VR, it's an artificially generated environment where I can move within that environment, I can pick things up, I can interact with characters in that environment, I can, you know, I'm in a fully immersive environment.
When you say it's artificially generated,
yes,
that's an absolute must have, is it? You can't film a real event in VR.
Oh, you can. So you can film live action, and then you can basically merge that into a VR environment. So there's a lot of green screen, a lot of motion capture, you know, lots of different ways that you can capture a live action performance and then insert that into a virtual environment. People like Imaginarium are, you know, working with that kind of technology at the moment, and there's a lot of people who are experimenting with being able to green screen into VR. And even Alt Space VR, which is a shared collaborative environment for social VR, have an option which allows you to have a green screen and be able to green screen yourself into the VR environment.
But in pure budget terms,
if
a production company says, great, we've got a night with Adele, we're going to film an Adele concert, we want to do it in VR, basically what you say is,
what
no, you're
really
not,
mean is
unless you're going to cut her out and stick her on a green screen and spend many millions of pounds more making it interactive.
Get her to wear a little mocap suit, be perfect.
Okay. All right, so that's the distinction. Let's talk about 360 then, since that is the thing that most people will be filming.
Yes.
It seems to me, as a complete layman in this, that the crucial difference as a TV director would be that your job as a TV director is to choose what the camera is pointing at.
Yes.
And when you're filming 360, you're not doing that. I mean, you're choosing where the bank of cameras are, but then you're then leaving it up to the viewer to decide what to look at.
So fundamentally, what we have to remember, it is a different medium. The first thing that we have to learn about that medium is that we no longer have control. And as film directors or TV directors, ultimately, not to be funny about it or anything, we do like control. We like to put a little frame, a little box, and say, this is what you will see because I want you to see this thing. This is, I'm the auteur, I'm telling you this thing, and I want you to see it through this box. In VR, much like in gaming, you have no control over where they're looking. They could be looking behind you for you know. And so it's less about framing the image and more about tempting and drawing the eye to the image. And
how do you do that?
So this is where, you know, good old immersive theatre and traditional theatre tactics come in very handy. So now we're talking about the use of binaural sound and audio to draw attention and light and
so
lighting.
So binaural
to draw the
sound is like a kind of 360 degree audio, isn't it?
Yes.
So you'd hear as the listener/viewer, if you're looking at quote-unquote, the wrong thing. You hear a sound effect behind you, you think, oh, there's something happening behind me.
So a really simple way of doing this, as a for example, sound cue behind you of a door opening and a little slant of light coming from behind would immediately make you turn around because you realise the door's just open behind you and you want to see what's in the door.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of very theatre-style tactics in terms of lighting cues and sound cues that draw the attention. So it's about drawing the attention and tempting the viewer rather than forcing the viewer as you would traditionally in TV.
Okay, and I guess the really good stuff, though, is the stuff that says, yeah, we'd like you to look at this bit of action that's happening behind you, but there's enough detail, I suppose this is more scripted than non-scripted, there's enough detail going on in this corner as well that if you choose to do that, like in gameplay, that will be rewarding as well.
This is a personal bugbearer of mine, which is that a lot of people, the first time they try and do a piece of 360 video, for some reason they assume that they have to do loads of stuff behind the viewer as well as in front of the viewer. And literally, they give the viewer whiplash because they're like, oh, I've got to look everywhere, I've got to keep on looking, keep on turning my head. And the reality, no pun intended, is, you know, if you're walking down the street as a human being, as just a normal human being, you may have a view of, a peripheral view of maybe 180 degrees if you're really good, and all you're doing is you're looking in front of you, and when you turn, your entire of your vision turns with you. So it's not like you're whipping back and forth, you know, and moving your head to catch what's going on around you. And that's part of this learning that needs to happen for people who are directing or creating content in 360s. Actually, you can have a blurry 20 to 40% degree angle behind you and nobody will ever care.
And if you're filming a drama or a piece to camera, then actually, obviously, what is often behind the presenter or the actors are the crew and some technical equipment. Now, where do you stand on the idea of it almost being like a second layer of director's commentary on a DVD, that actually you can watch the performance if you like, but if you turn around and look behind you, it's no big deal if you see the director and you see the sound guy, because actually that's another layer of interest.
Well, I suppose it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with the piece and how much immersion you want to create. And I think in some contexts, you know, for certain types of scripted content, that would absolutely work. I think a lot of people, though, are very, very obsessed with this idea of just removing any of the production element from the view of what the audience is seeing. So they want it to feel very immersive. And so there's this whole obsession with stitching a full 360 environment.
What kind of actors work best?
So here's the interesting thing, and I've been having this conversation recently, actually, with a lot of talent agents that represent talent, because we've been talking about what type of actors would they need to represent from a VR perspective. How do you get a gig for somebody in VR?
And they'll tell you all the people on my books, presumably.
No, they won't. Oh, okay. They'll be honest about it and say, actually, none of our guys have experience with VR, because the reality is it's a very different performance skill, and it still requires some re-education and some retraining for somebody to be able to perform well in VR. And here's the reason why, is because it isn't like film, where it's very much focused on the close-up, and you do your take and you're done in a couple of seconds or a couple of minutes, and you move on to the next take and you can reset and you can reset. You can't do that in VR. You have to be able to run all the way through. So it's very close to theatre, or the best type of actors are really immersive theatre actors who are used to doing the entire play in one go with no breaks, because the audience are there the whole time. You can't suddenly step away and kind of go, yeah, we'll just retake, sorry, I fluffed my line, we need to do that again. You just can't do that in VR. You need to have the entirety of that performance. It needs to be fluid. So there's a certain degree of theatre acting that is important, and also the whole, when people say don't spend it all at once, you know, that whole being too intense or too in the moment. With VR, you kind of need to be in the moment. And so there are a lot of actors who aren't able to sustain that. They aren't able to constantly give in that way, and that level of energy, and also not have that direction moment to moment, shot to shot. And then the other thing, of course, is motion capture. And acting for motion capture is very, very different. You know, speak to the guys at the Imaginarium, speak to, you know, Andy Serkis, and it's a very different skill set in terms of motion capture, being aware of your body, being aware of your habits and the way that you articulate using your body. Is incredibly important in VR. So it's kind of this fusion of immersive theatre acting and motion capture acting that a lot of actors straight out of, you know, acting school, they're not going to have that skill set. So there needs to be more training, more kind of merging of those skill sets in order for people to truly be able to step into, you know, a VR, you know, gig or, you know, a project and really be able to deliver right off the bat.
I love the idea that there's a sort of 21st century Singing in the Rain about, you know, movie actors that can't cut it anymore because they can't sustain a performance in 360 VR.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And are there big names from film and TV who are actively interested in pursuing this at the moment?
Oh, yes.
Who?
So,
not just because they're ticking a box or because they've met someone who worked on a game, but they actually want to.
They actually want to.
Who?
So, from a director's point of view, I know that Michael Bay has made a deal specifically with a company up in Aberdeen who should remain nameless. I know that Steven Spielberg has also made a deal with, I think it's Dreamcast.
Never.
So, they're in the US and they're doing retail outlets, shopping malls. VR, so much closer to things like The Void. Do you know what The Void is?
No, I actually don't. I'm just being ironic. I do know who Steven Spielberg is, but I don't know what The Void is. What's The Void?
So The Void and Zero Latency are two different examples of experiential VR. So in the case of Zero Latency, it's warehouse scale VR. So you go into a warehouse, there'll be maybe 6 or 8 people who are in a multiplayer game, or like a zombie killing game, basically. You've got your PC backpack on your back with the headset, you've got your gun in your hand, and you're in a shared environment, basically killing zombies together. And then on the flip side of that, you have The Void, which is an experience, I believe it's based out of Ohio, I could be completely wrong on that, but in a shopping centre in Ohio, they basically create a virtual environment for you to go explore with a backpack and a headset on, so it's portable VR essentially, but they've created props and sets within this environment so that as you see in the virtual world a table, you can touch a physical table and it just enhances your experience of the environments. So the idea being is that I believe Spielberg's deal with Dreamcast is to use Spielberg IPs to be able to create The Void type experiences, which will be awesome, obviously. And so there are a lot of people who are dabbling in that kind of experiential VR space, but certainly big names like Spielberg and Michael Bay are interested. If you want to look at that on the acting flip side of that, I know that Wesley Snipes has just done a movie called The Recall with Moving Pictures Media, and that was specifically shooting in VR elements of the movie as well. So they actually have
and that's VR, not 360. So
well,
you will be able to sort of walk around.
Technically, it's
360. Oh, hoisted on your own petard, young lady.
Well, no, I'm honouring Moving Pictures Media's description of what they did. Uh-huh. But the whole reason why Wesley Snipes signed on to that movie was because he was interested in VR, yeah, and he was interested in the technology and the 360 shooting that they were doing. So there are people both on the creative, you know, side of things, you know, the directing, producing side of things, and also the talent, you know, performance side of things, who are interested in this technology and how they need to evolve their performance.
But is it telling that throughout this interview you've discussed theme parks and you've talked about an installation in a shopping centre?
Yes.
That essentially for the mainstream general public,
yes,
you know, yes, there's media awareness and interest now.
Yes.
But for the mainstream general public, this is something that you do as a ride, as an experience, yeah, as an intrigue, but not something that you'll necessarily want to do in your front room every day.
Here's the thing, is I'm being very specific and I'm being very deliberate and perhaps a little bit biased in the way that I'm articulating, and that is because there is perhaps a certain degree of unrealistic assumptions that every person is suddenly going to have a VR headset in their home. And the reality of that scenario is that actually it will be the early adopters, it's going to be the PC gamers and the hardcore console gamers who are going to get into this first. So as a example, if you've got a PSVR, then you're already a hardcore PlayStation gamer. you know, you've got a PlayStation 4 in your home and you happen to have got the PS VR headset to go with it, means that you're already somebody who's reasonably committed to gaming as it is. Mm. If you're committing yourself to a HTC or an Oculus Rift, you're even more obsessive because you've gone and got, you know, a HMD, first of all, that ain't cheap. Then you've got to have a dedicated PC that can run it, which isn't cheap either. It's, you know, you're talking about $2,000 all in if you want a decent setup for that kind of thing. That's pretty committed people in the first place. You're talking about less than 2% of the population who've actually got VR in their home right now. And then if you look at the flip side of that, the other end of that, it's going to be the people who are dabbling around with things like, you know, the Gear VR for the mobile phone or Cardboard, which isn't exactly high-end VR. It's more, you know, it's 360 film, let's be honest.
But it hasn't caught on, is the nature of my question. You know, it is people that are dabbling around and playing with it, but it's not something... I play with it, but I don't do it every day.
The majority of the people who are dabbling with this are not going to be able to have a high-end quality experience unless they go to a theme park or unless they go somewhere where there's an experiential setup of this VR in action. Because those are the people who are actually going to make money out of this to start off with. People who are rushing in to, you know, spin up a VR game studio or spin up a, you know, a 360 film studio, right now, most of these people have no clue how they're going to make their money back. If you walk into one of those studios and you say, can I see your forecast? They're going to look at you very blankly and go, what do you mean forecast? Because they're all relying on PR money. They're all relying on the marketing budgets of people who will want to dabble in VR and want to create VR, not because they should, but just because they can. And those people, you know, they're big brands who are just saying, hey, let's do a bit of VR, in the same way that, you know, 10 years ago, it was, oh, we've got to have a mobile app.
And so are they getting that wrong? Or is it right that they should all be dabbling?
I mean, it's great that they're dabbling and it's great that the money is there, but give it, a, you know, 18 months or 24 months, then people are going to start asking, well, you know, where's my marketing budget, you know, going? What am I getting back for that? I've given you $1 million to make a bit of VR, but what do I get back out of that? And there's going to start to be those questions. And if people aren't educating themselves from the get-go as to how do I make my money in VR, then there's just going to be an awful lot of people who are creating unsustainable business models for their studio.
When it comes to making documentary...
Yes.
Is the filming process, I know it gets smaller and smaller all the time and you can use balls of GoPros and all this kind of thing. But is the filming process just intrinsically more intrusive? I worry as someone who goes out and talks to people. I mean, right now you and I are talking on two stick mics.
Yeah.
It's unobtrusive. You know, it's intimate. That's why podcasts work for me.
Yeah.
If we were filming it for the internet, we could put a couple of cameras here. If you're filming it in the 360, presumably you've got a bank of cameras. Talk to someone who's just had a traumatic experience or something
like
that.
Not at all.
Is it difficult?
Not at all. And one of the best people to talk to you about this is actually Sarah Jones from Coventry University. She does a lot of really great VR content. She's very experimental. She does a lot of documentary stuff. And ask her about her Irish dancers, okay? Which was a piece where she had a group of young Irish dancers, young girls, probably ages between 8 and 12, very, very young girls, and they were having a conversation and she just put a 360 camera in the middle of that conversation and the girls had a very organic, very natural conversation over the top of the camera and for them it was totally unintrusive and they were more intimate in that conversation than they would have been if there'd been a person there, a cameraman there or a camera person there with a camera sitting, you know, in amongst the group or you know, kind of with a, you know, a camera over somebody's shoulder. It would have been far more intrusive and they wouldn't have been as open as they were. So actually, in some ways, 360 is very, very good with documentary.
When Sky News go and film refugees in the ocean, you know, is it just bad taste to turn up with a bank of 10 cameras rather than one? Or am I wrong? Is it actually just not an issue?
Well, it depends what kind of camera you're using. But I mean, as you rightly say, you know, a GoPro camera, it's a little box. Yeah. It's a little square box. It's barely the size of the palm of your hand. And you can get like lots of small little, you know, cameras now that are literally the size of your hand. And it's not a bank of cameras at all. It's like a box or a ball or a, you know, a thing that isn't very intrusive at all. And being able to just kind of stick that in the middle of some action, because that's ultimately what most 360 film is at the moment, is just stick a camera in the middle of some action and let the action happen around it, especially in documentary. Just for the record, I think it's extremely lazy, but that's what most people are doing right now. But that isn't very intrusive, and it's very simple to have that kit in your pocket anytime, be able to whip the camera out. And there are certain people like Sarah or, you know, like Dean, who if you are, you know, with them, and suddenly they will just whip out that little box and they'll be recording, and it's very, very easy. So I don't think it has to be intrusive. I don't think it needs to necessarily be intrusive. And I think the technology is there, you know, in terms of it's got small enough that it doesn't have to be in your face obvious that you're, you know, sitting recording.
And if you're starting out
on
your first VR project, either because you're really excited genuinely by the creative opportunity or because some commissioner saddled you with having to make it and you think, oh, shit, I've got to do VR.
Yes.
What resources are there for you?
Oh my goodness, there are so many.
Top three.
First and foremost, you could... So are we talking production or are we talking community support? Are we talking funding? What are we talking here?
I think we're talking creatively making the show.
Okay.
The money's in place, even if it's not much money.
Right.
And you want to make the thing.
So you need to hire the crew. You need to get the right people in place.
Mm-hmm.
There are huge communities for this kind of thing. So there is the Augmented Reality Meetup group itself, which we happen to co-host. There's 4,400 people who are within that community. They're all makers. They're all creators who are creating in VR and AR. You've got the VRLO community at London. That's run by Rewind and Sol and the team over at Rewind. They meet maybe every kind of 3 or 4 months, but again, that's a huge community of people who are all making. If you're looking to do something that's non-profit and it's for VR for good, you've got VR Together, which is a community specifically dedicated to people who want to contribute their time and their expertise and their skills to create VR that is for good.
Great. So you don't just have to type into YouTube, how do I make a VR film?
No,
you can meet people.
There are so many people in real life, all over the world. There are lots and lots of different VR groups, whether you're in Manchester, Birmingham, Scotland, Australia, LA, New York, wherever you are in the world, there's going to be a group of people that you can physically get in a room with.
And of course, there's you, Tanya Laird. If people want to find out about Digital Jam, where can they go to do that?
Well, if you just want to view the content, you can go to Digital Jam Mix, which is MIX.com. If you want to find out more about us as a company, you can go to digitaljamlimited.com, and limited is spelled out in full, so it's LIMITED. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter at Digital Jam LTD, or you can join us via Facebook or also in VR, in Alt Space VR, because we host in Alt Space VR every month as well.
Pretty exhaustive. Tanya, thank you.
There are many ways you can't get involved.
You're right out there, in 360. A pleasure to meet you.
It was lovely to join you. Thanks so much for having me.
Tanya Laird. Thanks to her, that's it from us. Catch up with previous episodes and get new ones as soon as they're released by subscribing for free on our website, themediapodcast.com. This episode is dedicated to Stephen Wilson Beals. Steve is head of digital content for Global, looking after brands including Capital, Heart, and LBC, and newcomers Pop Buzz and We the Unicorns. He also bought me a beer at Web Summit in Lisbon, so thanks for that, Steve. Join Stephen, keep us on the air, go to themediapodcast.com/donate. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer Matt Hill, and the Media Podcast is a PPM production. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.